Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. As we continue to consider what is and is not being taught in schools, we come to three words people are tossing around a lot: critical race theory. There's a lot of confusion and misinformation about what critical race theory actually is, how it's taught, and who is teaching it to whom. Though CRT has its origins much further back than just this past year, recently has become the center of heated debate where politicians are using education and educational tools to score points. Today, we're joined by someone who has experience teaching critical race theory to high schoolers. My guest is former Portland Public School teacher and current director of educational equity at the Center for Equity and Inclusion, Jessica Mallory Best. We asked Jessica on the show to give us a rundown of what critical race theory is, its history, and how she approached teaching it to high school students. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
So I think it's really important to get a sense of what critical race theory is or what it isn't. So when you are taking, when you are talking to your students, when you give them the first overview, what do you tell them are the key concepts of critical race theory?
That is a great question, and I appreciate the beginning of this misinformation of how we are talking about it. We as a collective society right now are talking about critical race theory. When I teach young people about critical race theory, it is not right at the beginning. It is not until all the way until the second semester where we're seeing each other every other day for 90 minutes a day before we even get to scratching the surface of what critical race theory is. I think the common misconception about critical race theory is that it encompasses all of these things that are being talked about, like teaching U.S. history in a more accurate framework or with more narratives is somehow critical race theory. And that's just not what it is. And so I explained to the young people, we have to understand these foundational components. We have to have a shared common language before we can even look at the theory itself. You can't understand a theory if you don't know the words that are being used in it, if that makes sense.
Completely. And I'm sort of curious, how do your students respond when you set the table like that?
They respond with excitement. My class, when I taught it, is an elective. And so they chose in to sit in the seat. And we start at the very top with a clear foundation that we're not going to argue or debate in this space if racism is real. Racism is real. What we're going to do in this space is understand how it's thriving and functioning, how it shifts over time, and ways in which we can identify how it shows up in our institutions and our culture and our interpersonal relationships and also with us personally.
Would you mind walking us through a little bit of the history around the term critical race theory?
Yeah, so critical race theory was developed, it came out of critical legal scholarship. So attorneys who were working to study law, right, and create a real foundation around the institution of law in this country, realized or came to the conclusion that you can't look at law, which is the basis of our government structure, and not look at race. Right? That those two things are inherently interconnected. And so it started there. And a lot of the things that branched out of that are now moving into other institutions, right? Critical race theory in education or in policing or in business or in media. And you can use those similar lenses, but it has its roots in studying things like the Constitution and all that's encompassed in law, from what happens, you know, in a courtroom to sentencing to incarceration. And that race, if we're not looking at it with a racialized lens, then we're actually not really understanding why the law itself was created and who it's benefiting and who it's exploiting.
As you said, this started actually out of the legal world. So who was originally being taught about critical race theory?
You know, it is lawyers, I would say,
right?
And it wasn't until, like, you would go to university level or even law school and hear about these frameworks. And there's all sorts of tenets. I actually use five tenets that are more original to the theory, but it is developed. There's so much scholarship now that they're all different ways, but they have very similar languages. But I use five tenets, and one in which comes from Derrick Bell, who is one of the original creators of critical race theory.
What are the five tenets?
The five tenets that I look at, or we look at in our space, are whiteness as property, critique of liberalism. Whiteness as property, critique of liberalism. Now I'm like on the spot.
And I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Interest convergence and... it's escaping me right now because I'm nervous.
Because you're live on the radio. It'll come to you in a second.
Yeah, that's right.
Just shout out. When it comes back to you, just shout them out. My guest is Jessica Millar. She is a director of educational equity at the Center for Equity and Inclusion in Portland, a former Portland public high school teacher who taught critical race theory. So as I alluded to, there's been this discussion. It's become a national discussion with news media, politicians, lawmakers, everybody adding their two cents. And it all kind of stems back to, it's about a year ago. You know, I went down the Google rabbit hole.
It is a year ago.
It was a year ago, right? So this conservative activist appeared on Fox News about a year ago and had decided that critical race theory was a good tool to get his message across. And in the shorthand is that it's un-American or even anti-American. And as the story goes, according to one of the New Yorker articles I read, he got a call from the White House, this activist did. And he told a New Yorker reporter this, that Mark Meadows called him, the president's chief of staff, and said, "This is Mark Meadows, chief of staff, reaching out on behalf of the president, Mr. Trump. He saw your segment on Tucker last night, and he's instructed me to take action." Now, the Washington Post estimates that since that time, from then to June, critical race theory was mentioned 1,300 times on Fox News. So as someone who taught this, as someone who heard questions from young minds who elected to learn about this, what were you thinking as you watched this grow over the past year?
First, I'm not surprised. So as someone who studies race in this country and the ways in which certain tactics are used to continue to be divisive, while interestingly enough, blaming the study of anti-racism as divisive, these patterns are pretty predictable. But as I watched it grow, I actually used that interview to analyze in my class. And then oddly enough, this person also wrote an article, and I was in that article, about critical race theory and teaching it in Portland. And so watching it grow, it's just astounding to me, but also not surprising. The misinformation, the lack of awareness, this insidious fear around it when it's not true. And then the outrage, I think, this outrage, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is being taught to our kids. Like this outrage for as an educator, as someone who loves history, it's like, well, where is the outrage when we start to unpack and discover that the stories that have been told to our young people are actually false? Right? Or where's the outrage when we are creating false narratives around historical moments to our kids? But there is none. And that's because there is an agenda, right? And it makes people uncomfortable to start to question the very fabric and framework of our society. In my experience, it leaves kids feeling excited. I heard your last guest and about like finding their voice and possibility of doing things differently, right? Of not tearing anything down and burning it to the ground, but in fact using what we have access to and making this place better. But you cannot move what you do not see. And so the denial or this pushback on kids being able to see things more clearly, one has to ask those questions, right? Like, well, what's the purpose of that? And if you ask those questions, you usually find those answers.
You know, a big response to the people who don't want critical race theory in schools or to be taught or even talked about is people, I've heard this, no one has actually taught critical race theory at K-12 level. but you taught it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I did.
Mm-hmm. That statement is not 100% true either.
No, and in fact, that is unfortunate. You know, as we look at the way this is polarized, the right and the left, or the conservative or the Democrat, critical race theory is actually a holistic framework. So, for example, one of those tenets of critique of liberalism is really to look at these, the Democrats, for example, or whatever party you want to label as the liberal party, and how that is actually still complicit in this system, and be able to ask better questions about those things, to critique that. And that's something that is misunderstood so much, right? That this is, oh, it's against Republicans, or it's, oh, anti-conservative. It's like, no, it's looking at the whole framework, the entire system, the entire structure, and asking these questions. It is not one or the other. We're all part of it.
My guest is Jessica Mallari. She is a former Portland public school high school teacher who taught critical race theory. Why was it taught in your school?
Because I wanted it to be. In all honesty, I had started this class at another school that I taught at. And in the school that I taught recently, if you have an elective that you want to teach, you present it to your department. You should have a syllabus. You should meet the standards, all of these things. And then they approve it. And if young people sign up, then the course, and you have enough people, the course will run. Well, the first time I introduced this, and I couple it with actually an exploration of hip hop, and we use that in connection to critical race theory. We had three full sections of kids who wanted to take this class. And then when I was leaving, that was my entire schedule, meaning that we had kids signing up every year for six full classes. And I actually went from a one, we had all the way up to 5-6. So that's 3 years worth.
Now, Portland, I think most people know, is a fairly liberal part of Oregon. There's other parts of Oregon that are hugely conservative, especially the, you know, the parts up against Idaho. Have you ever had a kid in your class who signed up to challenge the theory?
No. not in that context. I definitely have had, you know, as I teach or taught government or modern world history, which is like global studies or world history. You know, this is just something, a way in which I view the world as well. And so that's going to show up. I'm very honest about that. And we can engage in conversation about that. And so there's been some pushback there. But kids who usually sign up to take this class, they signed up because something doesn't feel right. Because they feel like, I've been hearing these things, and or I've been feeling these things, or I've been actually experiencing these things. And I'm looking for language. I'm looking for language and understanding and the ability to engage in a conversation that I'm not able to have anywhere else. Right. And so, there, you know, before we even get to the study of the use of critical race theory, they're learning basic foundations on how to engage in conversations about race across difference. Right. And I think there's this misconception that just because I say I'm anti-racist, that, and someone else says they're anti-racist, and we're working to be that way, that we must agree all the time. And that is a really sad expectation, because really things don't grow out of everyone thinking the same. We can have a same framework, right? We are all working to be anti-racist, and we need all these different ideas. So, you know, disconnect or challenge is welcomed, actually. It is healthy. Mm-hmm. Conflict to that, in that regard, is very healthy. We as a society, as a culture, do not invite that. And we also don't teach our young people how to engage in that way, in a way that invites that as a place of possibility. Like, you don't have to be in critical judgment or mean, right? Or catty to disconnect. You can actually sit and we can engage. Let's talk about it and be open to changing our minds.
Do you have any texts or resources you might recommend to someone who's listening to this and thinking, you know, I really want to learn more about critical race theory, or maybe I want to talk to my child about it?
Yeah. A lot of people ask me that question, and I would offer, you know, to kind of take a step back and start some foundational work. the resources for critical race theory, there's a lot of scholarly articles that are maybe boring or not that easy to digest. We definitely break some of those down in a classroom space. But if you're looking to start just your journey of understanding race in this country, there's, I mean, your last guest, you said there were all of these books in the, mm-hmm. in their chosen bibliography, right? I would start there. Start reading about perspectives that are different than your own or ones that you're looking to grow. It is not something that I can be like, here's a book on critical race theory and you're good. Right. If you don't understand like the definition of racism, if you don't understand how racism functions at these levels of institutions, cultures, and personal and interpersonal, if you don't know what white supremacy is and how that shows up, right, or what whiteness is as a whole, those are places where you should start. And then you can start, you know, once you have that foundation, start to look at these articles if you're interested in the theory itself.
My guest has been Jessica Mallory Best. She is a former Portland Public High School teacher who taught critical race theory. Jessica, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.